Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey everyone, Bear Bets Podcast is back. I'm the Bear, Chris Felica. No Jeff Schwartz this week. He is on vacation. He just texted us all before with a picture of green slime. So he's at some Nickelodeon resort, I think, currently getting green slime. But we have Will Hill and Sammy P here to keep us going here with the gambling group chat. We're going to show everybody that we really don't need Jeff. We can motor on without the former offensive lineman. I think he just planned this. He's still a little bitter about Oregon getting knocked out by Creighton in double overtime there. So he just didn't want to hear any more about it. So it's us three, Final Four weekend, and both the men and the women are here. We're going to kick around some hoops. We got some MLB thoughts later in the show, maybe some draft thoughts and a best bet from the pitch at the end. And we'll see what Sammy and Will have as well. So we're going to kind of kick a bunch of stuff around this week, which will be fun. But obviously, I guess we start with the Final Four. I'm going to leave it up to my guests. Sammy, I want to start with you. Which story do we want to go with? Do we want to go with the UConn machine, or do we want to go with the incredible run by NC State? Which game do we want to start? We want to start with UConn Bama, or do we want to start with Purdue NC State? Dealer choice, Sammy, you're up.
I want to start with Jeff Schwartz walking around Nickelodeon like this, trying to make a bet, realizing that he can't. And you know he's holding the phone like way up here too, like he always does. That's the story.
So funny.
That's the story of the day. As for the Final Four, though, I think we have to start UConn. Right. I mean, UConn going for back-to-back titles, we were told collectively they can't do it because nobody ever does it. Hasn't been done since Billy Donovan in Florida when they had Joakim Noah and Al Horford and Corey Brewer. But this team, and I sort of led off with this last week, they are so warped, Will, that they still think they're the underdog. And they come out and they just blow these teams out. And it's almost scarier when the games are close at half. We saw them rip off a 30-0 run against Illinois. A very good Illinois offense, by the way, that came into the Final Four, or came into the Elite Eight, excuse me, the number two offense in the country. And UConn held them scoreless for like 55 minutes of real time on the watch. That's how scary they are. And it happens because their coach just finds a way to tell them or make them feel that they're not good enough. And they just won a national championship. Like, you rarely see this in sports. And here we go. An Alabama team that made a million threes against Clemson is getting 12 points in the Final Four. Like, that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, and you can always default to, hey, the three-point shot, if it goes in or if it doesn't go in. The scariest thing about UConn here, they haven't shot the three well. I mean, they were at one point, I think, 2 of 17 from three against Illinois. You look up, they're up by 30, where if you're the opponent, you think, all right, maybe they just have a bad shooting night. They go 4 for 23 and we can steal it. Well, they've been having the bad shooting nights and they're still killing everybody. So I don't know what the next answer is. As great as they've been, I don't know that I can get to laying 12. Obviously, they're beating all these teams by a ridiculous margin. 12 does seem inflated. I think these books, not only with UConn winning and covering, but all of these favorites have done very well. And I'm sure the books are very thankful NC State pulled through. I know Bear's not thankful, but these books are thankful that one of the underdogs came through to break up the monotony of the money line parlays, all the favorites just dominating. I think you're getting a couple extra points, maybe a point and a half extra with Bama. They're probably going to shoot, 40 threes? Maybe they can hit 18, 19 of them, hang in the game. I think if you're Bama and you're serious about winning the game, be up 12-4, be up 16-6, make UConn be in a position where, hey, you look up the scoreboard and wow, we're down 8, we're down 10. We haven't been in this position in a long time and they get a little tight. Easier said than done. I understand that, but I would lean towards Bama. Obviously, it's not a comfortable feeling to sit there and have your money tied up against this UConn team. They are going to finally be away from home, finally have to get on a plane. They've been so comfortable in Brooklyn and Boston, Big East tournament. I can't remember the last time this team even got on an airplane. I will say this, though. If you like Bama, no rush. They're seeing some 11.5, some 12. I wouldn't be surprised if this ticked up to 12.5 right before game time. Could you find a 13 somewhere just because of the book saying, hey, no more. We're not going to just keep getting buried with these UConn bets. They win. They cover every week. We're just going to make it so it's almost unplayable. Wouldn't be shocked if you got a 13 with Bama, Bear.
Do you think maybe the total? I mean, I know it's ridiculously high at 160.5, but I might be inclined to play that simply because if the thought is the only way Bama can stay in this game is if they knock down a bunch of threes, regardless of how many points they're either up or down, you're going to see them continuing shooting threes. UConn's going to get to the line a ton because of all the offensive rebounds they're probably going to get against. I can see a lot of UConn free throws. I can see a lot of Bama threes. Wouldn't surprise me if we were looking at a game where maybe UConn had 50 in the first half. Maybe you're looking at like a 50-40 halftime score like we've seen with Bama before in the tournament. But you hit on it before, and it's just so demoralizing as a team where the other night against you look at UConn, they're two in the Sweet 16 game. Like you said, they were 2-17 from three, and they're up 30 on a team that played the national title game last year. It's just they have so many different guys who can score, so many different guys who can handle the ball. They hit free throws for the most part. Like, you basically need a perfect storm of them missing shots, them getting in foul trouble, them having an off day from the line, them having a bad day defending, and you need a 1985 Villanova from three type effort to beat them. Because if you look at the odds, not only with this game, but the NC State Purdue game as well, you've got what are perceived to be two blowouts, and historically, if you go back since 85, they are two of the bigger point spreads in NCAA tournament in the field of 64 history. And you look at that, the UCLA Gonzaga game. We were talking about that earlier. How like Gonzaga was up with UCLA up with the ball and like didn't manage to fall short. So look, we've been in some of these games before, and UConn was a big dog when they beat Duke in 99 to win the national title. So upsets do happen, but a lot of times I would think it's just the way this tournament has gone, with just favorites covering and even games that they haven't necessarily been the right, like Alabama was in this game. They were not the right side. And we joked with Jeff last week about with Grand Canyon, like Grand Canyon was absolutely the right side in that game, and Alabama wind up covering. So we'll see if the run of favorites continues here. The other thing which I find people like to try and find like an edge, if you're looking maybe with a money line, right? A price to win the NCAA title versus a most outstanding player type bet. Like, I think if you think UConn's going to win, it's hard to like say, is it going to be Klingon? It probably will be Klingon, but like, are you sure maybe Newton doesn't go crazy or someone else goes nuts and hits a bunch of threes and has a special type two game series? So like, I think we all are in agreement. Like, if Alabama wins, it's going to be Sears. If NC State wins, it's going to be Burns. If Purdue wins, it's going to be Edie. But if UConn wins, like, there still could be a case for another couple of players, don't you think?
It could be another player, but I mean, if you were going to make like a pie chart, it's probably 50% Klingon, 20% Newton, and then like everybody else is in that last 25%. And the thing about Alabama is they are awful at guarding the rim. You know, they play with pace. They get up and down the court. They actually guard the three okay, but they are just barbecue chicken, as Shaq said, underneath. And Klingon ate Illinois up, and Illinois' two-point defense is better than Alabama's two-point defense. And at one point in that game, I think Illinois was being outscored 32-7 in the paint. And that was like in the middle of that 30-0 run. So I really do think it's Klingon or Newton. I would go with Klingon. I know at plus 180, that's not the sexiest price in the world. And one more quick thing on this total. This is the lowest Alabama point total in like 6 weeks. We're looking at 160 and a half right now. I mean, we've seen these totals going back to the middle of February, 174 and a half, 176, 175 and a half, 175. And this is one of the better over teams in the country. In fact, since the Florida game, Alabama is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 1 to the over. And yet this total is pretty low for a Bama game. And I understand because UConn is better defensively than almost every team in this bracket. But if Alabama can dictate the pace, they're going to score, you know, 75, and then UConn's an 11-point favorite. So, 86. Like, you do the math, we're at 86, 75 on probably a bad day. And that's going to be 161, which is exactly a half a point over the total. So if Alabama wants to run, that's fine. And if they make shots, this game's going to go over. But UConn is so efficient inside, and they get so many offensive rebounds and so many second and third chance points that it's going to be very tough for them to lose. Very, very tough.
Yeah, I'll be interested. Like, if you gave Hurley and UConn truth serum, how do they want to play? Are they happy to run and gun, or do they want to slow this game down? They are good in terms of just getting the game to the half court. And if they're scoring efficiently, now free throws are the great equalizer because you slow the game down, you put points on the board without the clock rolling. But like, it's hard to run off of makes. If UConn's making shots and they're able to get back, set their defense while Alabama's taking the ball out of the hoop and bring it up court, like, it's hard to run if you're not getting stops, if you're Bama. So I don't know. I would lean towards the over. I do think this will be a good live betting game where you'll see pretty early on how the pace is. UConn is happy to run with them, and then it's going to soar over, or UConn's going to drag it down into the mud where, you know, they turn it into a kind of a game where Grand Canyon played Bama. I mean, that's not that long ago. Grand Canyon, Bama, the game you alluded to, Bear, where I think it was like, what, 66-63 with a couple minutes to go. Really ugly, low scoring. Now, again, Bama missed shots, Grand Canyon missed shots. So I'm curious to see how UConn plays it, because I do think Bama is going to have a hard time running off of makes.
And remember this, Bear, two times this year, Bama thought, all right, we're going to run with Auburn and we're going to run with Kentucky. They lost 99-81 and 117-95. So they better be careful if they think they can run UConn off the floor, because more efficient offenses are just going to score and score and score. Yes, Alabama can shoot, but UConn can score from anywhere on the floor. So be careful what you wish for in a track meet.
And speaking of being careful what you wish for, in the other game, Purdue getting the 11 seed, the other big underdog, NC State. Look, Purdue's 9, 9.5, total around 146. Like, it's just unfathomable what that NC State is here. You look at how they finished the year. You look at they were tied with Louisville late in the first ACC game. The Virginia game, they're down. Virginia missed a bunch of free throws, an 88% free throw shooter missed one. You get the banked in three. Then you beat Duke. You beat Carolina. You got to play a Thursday game against Texas Tech, shorthanded win, and who's shorthanded, and you win. You get Oakland. If you look at their 3-point. Their opponents, 3-point shooting in the tournament. Texas Tech was 7-31. Oakland was 9-26 after going 15-31 and just driving a stake through Sammy and my hearts. Marquette was 4-31. Duke was 5-20. Their opponents in the tournament are a combined 25 of 108 from 3-point range. Like, yeah, yes, oh, it's 3-point defense, but how much of that, honestly, is great defense? Or is it just got, like, there was a great highlight rip that I saw someone put together on Marquette the other day on Twitter, like, just wide open looks for three, and just nothing was going in. Duke had wide open looks from three, just nothing went in. So, like, at some point, like, you keep thinking, okay, someone's got to make a shot. Someone's got to make a shot. Someone's got to, and no one has. It's been, Burns has been the most affable, like, player in the tournament. And I think from a story, from a Cinderella, it's great. But wow, I mean, now you're up against the guy who people can't really figure out how to officiate. Like, it's kind of, it's kind of hard to imagine this game going on without Edie getting Burns in foul trouble, isn't it, Will?
Yeah, sounds like you're in the camp that I'm in. I have a little more conviction on this game in terms of the spread. I want to lay it here with Purdue for the reasons you mentioned. Those numbers you spit out, 23% from three for the opponents for NC State. It's just ridiculous. Again, some of it's defense. A lot of it's not. A lot of it's, hey, we can sit here and talk all day about these games. Sometimes the ball goes in. Sometimes it doesn't. It just hasn't for the teams against NC State for whatever reason. And keeping Burns out of foul trouble, I think, will be difficult. And once you take him off the court, if you have to take him off the court, what do you have? Because he's so good to go around the rim. He's such a good instinctive passer that's going to close up a lot of their offense. And then at the other end, Edie's got a good 7-8 inches on Burns. How does Burns get a clean shot off against Edie? So, and again, if you have to get to a scenario where you're doubling Edie, that leaves the 3-point shooters open. Purdue is a team, I think, second in the country in terms of making threes and percentages. And the scary thing for NC State, Purdue missed a lot of them against Tennessee. I think it was 3 of 18 from three. So maybe they're due for a game where they shoot the threes. Yeah, go ahead.
Like in that game against Tennessee, like it looked like Laurier and those, they did not look like they wanted to take the shot. Like I don't know if it was pressure. I don't know if it was knowing that Edie was going to be there to bail him or whatever. But they did not look. It looked like a game like they knew the pressure was on them to win. And it's funny. I think it was Mike Krzyzewski. I remember I was listening to the Duke NC State game in the car ride home from my parents' house on Sunday, and like. There was someone who was talking about with coach that Coach K told them that like the game with the most pressure is the game to get to the Final Four. So we'll see maybe if those Purdue guards like you were talking about kind of exhale and maybe they're able to hit some more shots on a Saturday night.
We've also seen this Purdue defense really shine in the last 8 minutes of the last three regular season games. And let's not get it twisted. Utah State was a very good offense this year. Gonzaga was a great offense for the final 2 months. And Tennessee has one of the best scorers in the game in Dalton Connect. And that game was tied, I want to say 60-60 or 62-62. And then Tennessee got completely clamped. So that leads me to this total. And I know a very sharp group that came in right on post at 147 under. They hit under 147 and under 146.5. And we're looking right now. Most of the books across the country are at 146 painted. Circa is 145.5. That early move on the under is completely correlated with how good Purdue has been defensively. You really can't get much around the rim. And then late in games, also think about this, and this is not something that a lot of people think about. For the last 10 minutes of most second halves, Purdue's not shooting threes. They're shooting two because they're at the foul line. So the points in the second half go down because the opposition has 7 fouls with, you know, 13 minutes to go. And then it turns into, okay, Purdue gets 2 and then you throw up a brick. So we're getting in that like 2 to 3 points per minute where the points are more plentiful early in games when Laurier and Jones are shooting more threes. Purdue's point total comes crashing down in that second half because they are so busy getting to the foul line.
And usually there were you're working shot clock and there was a point in the game on Sunday where I think it was Edie had drawn 10 fouls on Tennessee and hadn't committed one. I mean, you talk about an Easter miracle of just the greatest offensive and defensive performance ever by a player, like not committing a foul and getting 10 drawn. I mean, that was pretty amazing. Will, did you have something else to say? I cut you off there before because what you were saying led to something that immediately popped into my mind. But did you have anything else to add? I want to make sure you get it out.
I had a brilliant point to make, but I just can't remember what it was. No, I think I pretty much covered it. I think we're both looking to lay Purdue, get involved with Purdue at some way. I think just laying it is probably the best way to go. Maybe a Purdue team total over, because I do think we all kind of are on the same page where this is probably just going to be another parade to the free throw line for Edie. And that slows the clock down. That stops the clock. You get able to add points. It makes you double them, leaves 3-point shooters open. So maybe a Purdue team total over, but I think the Cinderella story ends. It's always the hardest thing in sports betting too, because I was on NC State against Marquette. I was on NC State against Duke, I thought both those lines were just a little bit inflated. Against the 3-point variance, you can say whatever you want, but those got home. It's hard when a team is cashed for you to know, hey, this is when I'm going to jump off. Sometimes you can stay on that train a little too long. And boy, can we just sit here for a second and lament the fact that we had this opportunity? Imagine if somebody woke up with a premonition 2-3 weeks ago. He said, you know what? You know who's going to go on a run? The NC State Wolfpack are going to win 9 in a row. I just have a feeling. I mean, all of us would be on an island somewhere. It's why we love sports betting. We can never quite figure it out. You can never quite get the answer right. We could have sat here for hours and talked about all these teams, all these games. Who would have ever come up with NC State in the Final Four?
How about them? They were right. As high as 250-1 to win the whole thing. Coming into the dance. Now, one book had 300, but that's not exactly a legal book in this country. The highest American price on NC State to win the whole thing, 250-1.
And I think the money line rollover was like double that. Somebody did the math. I think it was Jeff Fogle on Twitter, like did the math of the money line rollover, even with the Kentucky upset, which you wouldn't have built in there. I think you could have gotten like over 500-1 if they keep getting it. It's just incredible. Yeah.
It's truly crazy. Like you talk, and I even think like you factor in Jamal Shedd getting hurt against Duke, and maybe great Houston point. Beats Duke if Shedd doesn't get hurt, and then you got to play Houston. It is probably a worse matchup, for instance. So like
in Texas, you know, too.
Everything absolutely going right. But hey, they made their own luck. They won the games they needed to. But the odds makers certainly don't expect them to win Saturday. So if we get UConn Purdue, like I think, I don't know, I should say it. I don't think everybody wants UConn Purdue. I think there's a large group of people out there who don't want to see Purdue get there, and they want to see NC State get there. But if it is UConn Purdue, I think we're looking, what I saw was that UConn -6. That feels kind of high, doesn't it?
I think it depends on how Bama. Yeah, it depends on how UConn wins. If this is another UConn bloodbath where they win by 20, you got to just jack it up and keep jacking it up. If UConn squeaks by and they look a little vulnerable, maybe 5. So again, we're splitting differences, but 5-6, 5-6, depending on how each team does. It's because all wins are not created equally.
Would you hop on 6 there, Bear? It sounds like you were like leading the patients to the ward there, but it sounds like you might like the points.
I would wait because I think kind of like Will was talking about before, waiting with Bama to get a 13. I would, assuming UConn goes out and looks good, like you guys were just talking about, like I would wait because I think you could probably get a 6.5 or a 7, but I'd be inclined to take Purdue +6.5 or 7.
I sound really dumb, man, because I was like, oh, there's no way I'd take UConn or Purdue against the field. And here we are. We have both teams are basically double-digit favorites in the Final Four because that's the way it's supposed to go. I guess I don't know that this is going to be like a sexy matchup that the country is going to watch. But in terms of the best two teams, I mean, Vegas tried to tell us, Circa Sports tried to tell us, it's UConn and Purdue against the field. And here we are with two games to go before the national championship. And it's extremely likely, like a money line parlay, Purdue and UConn to make it. I'm not saying do it, but it's -260. Like, so they're probably going to meet in the championship game. And my number right now, as we tape this early in the week, is 5.5 if they were to meet on a neutral.
That damn Jeff Benson right again. Like, is unbelievable. Ugh. We're talking, like, going back to Sammy's comment about Circa, if you don't know who Jeff Benson is over at Circa. You should
love Jeff Benson.
Follow him on Twitter. He's a good follow. Lots of thoughts out there. But before we move on to other topics here, women's Final Four also set 2 really good games last night. The Iowa LSU game certainly, I think, lived up and maybe even surpassed all expectations. Ridiculous performance from Caitlin Clark to get the Hawkeyes back to the Final Four, and now they face UConn, who wound up beating USC last night. Paige Beckers was ridiculous as well. So now, yeah, there was a comment from Gino, and living in Connecticut, I mean, you get a lot more UConn women's basketball coverage and you see a lot more, but there was a comment about him like saying, oh, she's the best player in the country. And that I'm sure that will wind up on a bulletin board in Iowa City. With now UConn facing Iowa in the Final Four. Iowa 2.5 against UConn. It seems like every, I don't want to say every round, but maybe against LSU, maybe against UConn as well, where people will say, okay, Iowa has the best player on the floor, but they're not the better team. Like, is that a thought process here, Will, with you? Like, would you lay the 2.5 with Iowa, or would you consider taking UConn the short dog? Certainly, you and I living in this state know that this isn't one of the historically dominant, great UConn teams like Geno has had in the past. They were a 3 seed in the tournament, but it seems like Iowa 2.5 is a number where they're kind of saying, okay, we'll take all the Iowa money we want. Now, obviously, that did not work out well last night against LSU, because that number was bet up from like Iowa 1.5 to 2.5. It was never in doubt. But it seems like if you like UConn, you might be on the right side with where that number's opening.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because like you said, UConn's a 3 seed, but they were a good 3.5 point favorites over the 1 seed USC. I always think with Iowa, you're paying a tax, because Clark is so much fun to watch. He's so much fun to root for, to bet on. We talk about this all the time. The things that are fun to bet on, you get a tax. Sometimes it's better to go boring, but UConn's as public as it gets. I mean, people think of women's basketball, women's college hoops, they think of UConn. So does that offset each other? I don't know. I do think it's hard to go against Clark. I do think Iowa wins. I'll be interested, and I don't think we have them up yet, player props, because you can't, it's almost like we talk about with the UConn men, and you have to make the line a little higher just to balance the action. Don't you have to just jack the Caitlin Clark number a couple points higher than the numbers say it should be? And does that give you enough of like wiggle room where you can have the guts to go under? Because I will say this, knowing Oriyema, he's a tough old school guy. He's got a little Bill Belichick in him. I believe he's a Patriots fan. He's up in Mass with you, Sam. He lives up there. He's a big Patriots fan. And a big Belichick thing is, hey, I'm not going to let the other team's best player beat me. I'm going to make him play left-handed. LSU's game plan Monday night against Iowa was a little ridiculous, going under screens, leaving her wide open. I get you can't just double team her from the logo like she was shooting them, but I do think they'll do something to go at her and just, hey, whether it's put her in foul trouble on defense, make her defend and wear her down, take the ball out of her hands. I think that line will probably be inflated. So when Caitlin Clark's point prop opens, and maybe that's one thing where you can wait for game time, Sammy, maybe look for an under. I know it's not going to be fun to root for on Friday, but maybe that's the way to go.
Yeah, and if you don't want to sweat the Caitlin Clark point prop under, which is probably, I mean, it's probably going to open like 29.5, 30.5, especially considering this game is totaled in the low 160s. Conversely, South Carolina NC State on the other side of the bracket is totaled at 139.5. So we're going to see more points in Iowa and UConn. I would look for, and Bear, you're going to love this one. How about the Caitlin Clark assist prop over? Like, that's what I want. I want the Caitlin Clark assist prop. She's been such a good facilitator her whole career. And I think when a lot of people and a lot of casual bettors jump into the market, they see the logo threes and they see all these big shots and they're like, oh, well, she'll score 30. But really, she's racking up games where she's got 8, 9, 10 assists. And to me, she's a dangerous passer. And in some weird way, Iowa's more dangerous when she doesn't have to carry the brunt of the scoring, when Gabby Marshall is scoring, when they're getting the ball inside. Those backdoor passes to Kate Martin, that's when Iowa is at its best, when Clark doesn't have to score 30 points. When I was in Vegas and we were taping the Bear Bet show at 8 o'clock in the morning, Vegas time, and my internet didn't work.
Thanks for getting up. We appreciate you getting up at nice and early Vegas time.
I went to bed at like 4 and got up at 8 for you,
Bear. I was actually going to say, did you even go to bed?
I did. I look pretty good too for 4 hours in Vegas.
Dash.
But the point I was making, and we were talking about, well, what's the future bet to make? And at the time, I said Iowa 5-1 because it's fun to root for Caitlin Clark. When I saw this number open, though, against UConn, I went, ooh, I'm probably in trouble here. To open America's team at only 3 and see it get whacked right away to 2.5, it has me nervous. But at the same time, like, I can't really hedge it. Like, I guess I could take UConn plus the points, but
yeah, that's what I was going to say. Would you take UConn if it somehow gets back to 3?
No, because I mean, I don't make bets to hedge. I know a lot of people want to talk about hedging at this point in time. I'm not going to hedge this round. And then the crazy part is, if I were to take a UConn future at 6-1 or 7-1, I still got to deal with South Carolina from the other side. And South Carolina is going to be a 8-9 point favorite. So you sort of, at this point, you roll with who you came with. And There's nothing to do here. Now, if it's a different conversation, if NC State can beat South Carolina, because then I'm the favorite. But I think at this point, if you have an Iowa future from this show and you bet 10 to win 50 or 100 to win 500, just roll it and see if they can get to the title game.
Yeah, I'd look at taking the NC State plus the points against South Carolina. Like South Carolina has let teams back in games the last couple of rounds where they're up 20, and the next thing you know, it's a 4-point game in the fourth quarter, and that's dangerous because NC State's a team where I remember I was following along scores in the Sweet 16, and Stanford I saw was up double digits at halftime. I'm like, ooh, that's going to be. I'm going to get Stanford moving on. And NC State all of a sudden went out in the third quarter. And next thing you know, they went from 10 down at half and they're 20 up. And it was just amazing to see how, or I shouldn't say 20 up, but they were 12, I think. They were double digits up, 20-point swing was what I meant to say. But NC State, I think, is a type of team that in that area of the country, hearing about South Carolina, ACC, SEC kind of rivalry, I could see NC State hanging around plus the points against South Carolina. And again, you mentioned it too with how the total is seen so low. You want to lay 11.5, 12 in a game that's kind of on par to be seen as like 65, 52, somewhere around there. Like, it seems like a lot of points to lay with a team that's let some teams back in games against a pretty confident, resilient team in NC State.
I will say, if we're looking at, and I do think this will probably be a South Carolina-Iowa title game, I could see a scenario where Iowa gets bet a lot of public money. People want to root for Clark and bet on Clark. You might get a pretty cheap South Carolina price, especially like on a money line. I know, you know, most people don't want to lay the whatever $3, but Bear, I know you'll probably look at it just as like a numbers guy and say, hey, especially in a title game standalone, people want to bet a little to win a lot. That comes around the other way on the money line, where you might get a reasonable money line on South Carolina if that is the matchup.
I do want to say one more thing, Bear, about the women's bracket.
Yeah.
Angel Reese playing the victim on Monday night was so good. So good. You know, last year she's running around pointing to her ring finger against UCLA in this tournament. She's putting the L on her forehead. She had a crown on the bench when Caitlin Clark was warming up, and then they lose last night at LSU. And she's like, well, nobody likes us. Why do you think nobody likes you? Because you're a sore winner. And now she's going to play the victim card. I thought that was classic last
night. It all went, I mean, you know, well, I'm not advocating anything, any of the hate and that was dished out her way and threatening combo, whatever. That's not good. But the way they were kind of sore winners last year, and you won the title, you should celebrate, but it was a little overboard. So I think there probably was a good portion of the country that enjoyed seeing LSU go down to the team that they wound up beating in the national title game last year. And Will, back to your point about South Carolina and Iowa, if we do get South Carolina, Iowa, yeah, I think you're right, because I think people will remember Iowa beat South Carolina last year in the tournament. This is a new South Carolina team. Iowa, Caitlin Clark back better. Like, I think that thought process will be that it's supposed to be, you're going to get either the undefeated national champion or Caitlin Clark going out on top. And I think there will be a lot of people that bet Iowa thinking that it's like this destined thing to happen with Iowa winning the national title. So before we put a complete bow on hoops, Sammy, I'm going to start with you because I think I know your answer to this already. With this NCAA tournament, which has been a massive failure on my end. I have not had a good tournament at all, openly admit it. And if those of you who follow me on Twitter know what some of the picks I've given out, it has not gone well. Been on the right side of a lot of games, Oregon Creighton under 148.5, and came out a loser. But if you could have one bet back from this tournament, you just, whether it's I shouldn't have made the bet for whatever reason, what would it be? Sammy, go ahead and say it, because we know what you're going to say.
Well, I never regret any bets. I mean, look, Alabama went to the Final Four with the Kentucky blueprint. Just run up, score, shoot threes, and they'll play defense. Like, I don't regret. I hate that they lost. The bet that I hate the most was the Alabama Grand Canyon second half. And I took Grand Canyon pretty heavy second half, wink, wink, and it did not work out. That was a game that was like 28-28 right before the half. Bama closed on like an 8-0 run. I got even more points in the second half. I think I got like 2.5. So I was catching like 9.5 in the second half with Grand Canyon, who, oh, by the way, was up 3 with 4 minutes to go and lost by 12, 13. So I got kind of thrown into the coffin in the first half and then pulled out of the coffin and thrown back in the coffin and lowered into the ground in the second half. Alabama killed me against Grand Canyon and against Clemson, and I still don't think they're that good. But sometimes you step up financially, you take a stand against a team, they beat you once, you go back to the well, they beat you again. And that team, you know, 2 straight weekends just crushed me. I'm still a little upset about Drake opening night of the tournament, having a big lead. Oh. I mean, see, those are tougher than Kentucky, because like Kentucky was a 25-30-1 future that's probably not going to win. Like, was it a good bet? No, but that's one unit. When you have victory in your hands, like Drake did that first night against Washington State, and they're up 12 points with 3 minutes to go, and they lose. Those are the ones that keep you up at night, not Kentucky futures.
Yeah, I mean, anytime the dogs don't do well for a long stretch, it's just that's, I think we're all kind of in the same boat where a lot of times are dog or pass, and you know, you're going to take these underdogs, and if they don't play well, it's not going to go well for us. I had an okay tournament, so not terrible. I've had better, but I thought Yale against San Diego State would be more competitive, and San Diego State just absolutely buried them. Another one I regret, maybe we just overlooked Purdue because of their past history. We let the current team, their current form get in the way of how we judge them, where, you know, you look up and they're in the Final Four. Should we really be that surprised? They were really good this year. Maybe we were too much of a, what's the opposite of prisoner of the moment, where we were just a victim of the past and we were thinking about St. Peter's and thinking about Fairleigh Dickinson and the past failures, where we let this team's talent just kind of fool us a little bit.
Well, I'm surprised, Will, because I thought you and I would have had the same one. And you got to go all the way back to the first game of the tournament.
Taking
Mississippi State against December, January, February. And so, that was one of those where the numbers and the handicap worked out. But again, it's one of those like, why did you bet against Tom Izzo in like a 7-10, 8-9 type game? And immediately, like when that game happened,
it was 8-4. And I was like, what the hell did I do?
When you knew what type of tournament it was going to be when you decided to bet against Tom Izzo and Michigan State in the first game of the tournament.
Yep. At 8-4, I said, what the hell did I do? Literally 8-4, where I'm just, and we all have this as bettors, like down 2-0. Oh, man. You know, sometimes we can have this defeatist attitude, which is not healthy. But yeah, I knew right away. First score I saw was, I remember I was sitting right here. It was 8-4. I was just finishing something. Like, man, what did I do? I've made a giant mistake. Mistakes were
mine. I have had so many 30 and 35 minute dogs in this tournament. It makes me sick. And what I mean by that is when you have a team that's either up at half or right there at half, you get to the 10 minute mark of the second half, they're still there. I had 3 in a row this past weekend. I think it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I had Creighton, who was up at half against Tennessee, was basically right there with Tennessee, fell apart. I mentioned Clemson against Alabama. Clemson's up 26-13, loses the first half, loses the game, ATS. And then I went to Tennessee, tied 4 minutes to go, and then just don't score. Like, those are the worst. When you're on the right dog for 35 minutes, and then the dog just decides, we're going to stop scoring. Those are the worst. I would rather lose by 40. I'd rather have Illinois than have Tennessee against Purdue, because they were in it for 80% of the game, and then you don't get the money. And those are the worst. This has been, for me at least, the tournament of the 30 to 35 minute dogs that just couldn't get to the finish line.
Yeah, it's coulda, woulda, shoulda, coulda. We've all had them, and it's unfortunate for us. But hey, there are people out there who have profited. So if you've been on the right side of some of these, then congratulations. Go make a nice offering in the basket on next trip to Mass. Moving on to a better subject now. One season ending, one season beginning. Baseball, we're about a week into the season now. I know we don't have a great sample size of games, but based on what you guys have seen so far, are there any bets that you have made or thinking of making, wish you would have made? Just kind of based on what we've seen so far. Will, I'll start with you.
Yeah, two takeaways. The Yankees, and you and I are both in the same boat where we're Yankee fans.
Good, but we've Soto.
Hated, oh man, he's so good. And we've hated watching this team the last 4 or 5 years. Yeah. Even though they've had some good teams, it's been stale. When Judge doesn't do anything, nobody does anything. They strike out a lot. They hit in with a lot of double plays. Very unathletic, very right-handed. They flipped all that. Volpe's coming into his own. You add Verdugo, you add Soto. They're more left-handed. They're more balanced. You slide everyone down a notch. There's less pressure on everybody. Again, we're only a handful of games into the season, and I think Holmes is an issue at the end of the game. They don't have great starting pitching. They're obviously going to need Cole back, but that is a championship top three, top five lineup. They're really good on offense. So Yankees are fun to watch. Yankees with some impressive wins so far. And how about Pittsburgh? By the time people listen to this, maybe they're still undefeated. Again, they've played the Marlins and they've played the Nationals, but still, those are all games on the road and they've banked those wins. And I don't know, they're plus 950 at some books to win the division. What's it going to take to win that division? Maybe 85, maybe 86?
Yeah, I was going to say 87 maybe.
Yeah, tops. And look, you got Skeens in the number one pick in the draft. At some point, can come up. You know, Jared Jones was a top prospect. He's up there. He made the team. You got Cruz, who looks like he's going to be a superstar. I mean, they won, I think, mid-70s last year. Could you jump by 9-10 games and get to 85?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, it's unlikely, but it's possible. And if nothing else, you probably stay in it for the summer and have something to watch, something to sweat. So the Pirates are around 10-1 to win a division. That could be a fun one where you look up in June and you're like, wow, I can't believe I got this number. Or, wow, what the hell was I thinking? But I like the Pirates. I think they've played well here. They might be a little better. And that's a good fan base, a good baseball city. I'm hoping for their fans, for their sake, that they're a little better.
Too.
Yes, it is. Very good park.
There's a nice range on that team, too. As we tape this, one book right now has plus 950 on Pittsburgh to win the NL Central. At the bottom of the barrel, 6-1. Yeah. So if you're betting Pirate futures to win the division, don't bet 6-1. Bet the 950. That's a hell of a call. It's an exciting young team that might be a little ahead of schedule, but they've got a bunch of talent in Pittsburgh. I'm going to go short on a team. I'm going to go White Sox here. Now, through four games, they have 8 runs. Not exactly great. They have like 4 automatic outs in the lineup. And this is at full strength, by the way, Bear. I mean, these guys are healthy. So eventually the injuries are going to happen to Eloy Jimenez, who has historically ripped his pec trying to rob a home run in spring training.
Oh, I think he's already hurt.
His groin running to first base.
He's hurt already.
Oh, he's already hurt? Okay, well, good. I like it even more now. Luis Robert, famously 2 years ago when the White Sox were 3 games out in September, he nursed a wrist injury for like 3. Like, they're just soft. They're soft as hell. They are still, right now, 3-1. They have the worst record in baseball. I found it at DraftKings. 3-1. They can't hit. They can't pitch. Their bullpen sucks. Their manager is awful. And did you see what happened yesterday in the White Sox game? They didn't even have the first base coach on the field already. They had to pause the game because first base coach forgot that he had to go out and coach first base. This is dysfunction in April, early April. I know the A's are bad and the Rockies are bad, but the White Sox have no hope. And there's no prospects ready to come up, and they might start flipping guys. What if they trade Luis Robert at the deadline? Then you got 5 automatic outs. This team is bad. Bad, 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 bad. And at 3-1, worst record, 100 losses plus, I don't think that's the worst idea.
Yeah, it's going to be curious to see, like, how many losses it's going to take, because, like, the A's had some pieces you thought – and then you send Ruiz down already, like losing 3 or 4 to the Guardians. So it might take 105 to be the biggest loser per se. Yeah, I made a Bobby Miller Cy Young bet at 25-1, and I made a Bobby Miller to lead the major leagues in wins at 30-1. I think that he's going to be the ace of that staff. I think that team is going to win 107, 8, 9, maybe 10 games. They've lived up to expectations so far. So I think Bobby Miller was someone that, again, it's hard betting into a National League Cy Young market with the likes of Spencer Strider in there. But we saw last year Spencer Strider didn't win, and his metrics were through the roof. And you had Blake Snell have the type of year, and he was like 80 or 90 to one at some point early in the year. So I think if Bobby Miller can win 17, 18 games maybe for the best team in baseball, and the strikeout numbers that he had, if he can continue that, I think he's still around 20 to one or so. So Bobby Miller, NL Cy Young, and to lead the majors in wins was something I played. NFL draft. I don't know what is out there in terms of availability for everywhere, but there are two things that I played, and I'm mad at myself because I didn't get the best of the number on one of them. I played over 4.5 quarterbacks in round one, and I did not get the best number. I played it like right when the news about Penix's pro day was coming out. Like, they're going to be 5 quarterbacks taken in the first round. And I think you've got a better shot at 6 than you do 4. So I played over 4.5 quarterbacks round one. And I did get a good number on over 6.5 wide receivers in round one. If you look at the mocks now, the Matt Miller mock on ESPN.com does have 7. He's got 2 wide receivers, Xavier Leggett and Keon Coleman, going at the very top of the second round. Tony Franklin is another guy that some teams like, some teams don't dislike. But I think if you look at Marvin Harrison Jr., Neighbors, Thomas, Adunze, a guy who's pretty dialed in at Texas, who is here, and that both A.D. Mitchell and Xavier Worthy are going to go somewhere between 25 and 32. Ladd McConkey is someone who's kind of sneaking up there as well. So I went over 6.5 at plus money in terms of wide receivers. So I don't know if you guys have made any draft bets or if you have any thoughts on either of those, if you like, dislike anything that I just played.
You're buying the Penix thing, huh?
I am, yeah. I think he is going to go in the first round. Just because we've seen it before with just the extra year of contractual control, and the most important position on the team is a quarterback, and teams often kind of fail reaching for a quarterback, taking it too high. But I think it's certainly in the back end of the first round, you're going to see someone step up and take that 5th quarterback and maybe a 6th.
Plus, it's a weaker draft next year.
Sorry, Will. The only thing I have to add is I have Joe Alt minus 300 to be the first all lineman taken. And if it doesn't happen, I will not be happy. But I think he could go as high as 5 or 6. And to me, it's him against everybody else. I know people don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear you lay minus 300 or something like that. But I think Joe Alt should be minus 500.
I think I saw 350. I was looking at some props last night, and I think I saw 350. And there was another one that I saw that was posted again in a place in a faraway land, that they had players drafted by conference props. I haven't broken that down yet, but I think that's another market that might be. I'm going to see if we can find a bet there. Will.
Yeah, and to your point about the quarterbacks, which makes the over a good bet. Not only is Penix probably going to go in the first round, but it doesn't have to be Penix. It could be Knicks. It could be somebody else. So, and plus, next year is a weaker quarterback draft. So teams look at it and say, "Hey, I can't get my guy next year. I better find somebody this year." So that adds to it. I don't know though. It's hard to find this stuff. Less is available in terms of the draft. Like, we don't even have this in Connecticut, so we have to go on a little manhunt to find these markets. And there's just more eyes on it. There's more shows like this. Betting is just more talked about. I mean, it's 5-6 years ago, Baker Mayfield was 50 to one to be the first pick in the draft, like the week of the draft, the night before. You don't find those anymore. There's more eyes on it. There's less available. The books, we have kind of saying, you know what, we're going to take our ball and go home because we've had a couple of bad drafts. So it's not as easy. It's not like I can just list off 5 or 6 bets that, like, I love this bet, that bet, this other bet. I don't know. I don't see a ton. I do see team to draft certain position. It's interesting. Jets to get Bowers about even money, a little higher than that. I don't know about that. I still think for them to pick an offensive lineman at like 3 to 1 is worth a shot, because I know they've re-upped, re-insured this offensive line. They've gotten some guys here in free agency, but those are older players. They're veteran players. They're free agents for a reason. I don't know that you can feel, if you're the Jets, like you've completely solved the offensive line in terms of their health issues. So maybe at 3-1, they still pick an offensive lineman, especially if the three big time receivers, Neighbors, Harrison, and Dunze, are all gone by the time they pick at 10. Maybe they still go offensive lines.
Yeah. If you're relying on Tyron Smith, I mean, like, when was the last time he's played a complete right. season? Like, that's the thing with him. We'll give you a little bit of a Jets rant now. Like, yeah, the moves that they've made, but like, what are you getting from Mike Williams? How healthy is he going to be? Like, what are you getting from Smith? Like, who knows? I mean, on paper, it looks great. They're making moves within the division, and it seems like the Dolphins have gotten worse and the Bills have gotten worse, but we'll ultimately see what happens. So, time for best bets. Usually you're not around when Jeff and I are giving out best bets to mixed successes. Sammy, I'll start with you. This is kind of impromptu. So if you've got something within the next couple of days or in the weekend with hoops, a season-long prop or anything that's sticking in your mind is maybe a best bet that you want to give the people?
I wasn't prepared for this, but I will give you the under NC State Purdue. In the Final Four, under 146. Like, and quick plug, foxsports.com this week, I took the 8 most storied franchises in college basketball history, and we're pitting them all against each other. I believe, Bear, the favorite is going to be the UCLA team with Lonzo Ball, Reggie Miller, Jamal Wilkes, Bill Walton, and Lou Alcindor. That'll be coming up later this week.
Pretty
on
good
Fox.
Five.
So there's a best bet for you.
I'll hit the 9 with Purdue. Purdue minus 9, and I'll go Pirates plus 950 to win the division. Best bets.
I'm gonna hop on your Pirate. I'm gonna ride the Pirates with you. But my wife is a Yinzer as well, so she'll be if I all of a sudden I throw on a Pirates game in July, she won't be totally suspicious as to why are you throwing on a Pirates. I got that the other day. She came up here. I had the South Carolina Duke game on, I think it was. And she's like, you're watching women's basketball? I'm like, oh, yeah. And I went to South Carolina. I saw they're in a game and they haven't lost yet. So I kind of played it off like, oh, yeah, they might lose. And meanwhile, I have like South Carolina futures tickets out the wazoo. So I was able to play that off well. But my best bet, I teased it at the top of the show. I'm going to the pitch. I'm going to the Prem. I'm going to the EPL. And Liverpool to win the Prem at plus 120. I am a Liverpool guy. I've been to Anfield. I've supported them for 30 somewhat years. And normally I am superly pessimistic about my team's opportunities and chances of winning, but I'm all in. Jurgen Klopp, a couple of years back, they were dubbed the mentality monsters with how they just always seem to just always overcome and get points from losing positions, overcome injuries. And it's been the same thing this year. Won a game against Brighton on Sunday, again, from trailed 1-0 early, came back, won, have overcome a massive amount of injuries this year. And right now, here they are. They're 2 points up on Arsenal. They're 3 points up on Man City. They have the easiest road in amongst any of the teams, Arsenal and City out there. If you look at both Arsenal and City, they're still alive, both in the FA Cup. They're still both alive in the Champions League. And they're both now at the point where they kind of have to, like, go for it. And if you look at Arsenal, they got to go to Brighton. They got Chelsea. They got to go to Spurs. They got to go to Man United. Like, that's a difficult in for them. And I know they do have the goal differential end on Liverpool, but that's hard. Like, for them to make up the 2 points there, I think is going to be difficult. And then City, they got to go to Brighton as well. They got a pretty easy in, but they're 3 points behind Liverpool. They need Liverpool basically to drop 4 points because they're still behind them in goal differential as well. So Liverpool, despite all the injuries that they've had, still no Alisson Becker, still no Diego Jota, Andy Robertson, Curtis Jones is out. They lost Szoboszlai for a while. Mo Salah was out for over a month. Like, Luis Diaz was out. Like, they have lost a ton of people. And here they are still standing. 9 matches left, 2 points up. You'll never walk alone. The Kop is going to be ready to roll. The final game of the year against Wolves, I believe it is on May 19th. Liverpool to win the Prem plus money. We'll be back next week. We'll maybe a little another baseball follow up. Maybe we'll put a bow tie on the Final Four. We'll preview that little golf event in Georgia taking place that Scottie Scheffler is going to be everybody's pick to win. I'm quite sure, but it'll be fun. So Jeff will be back next week. We'll talk baseball. We'll talk soccer, golf, hockey. Maybe who knows? Who knows what's going to come up next week? But for Sammy, for Will, I'm Bear. We appreciate you listening, subscribing, rating, reviewing, and checking us out on that YouTube show again. And remember, the less you bet, the more you lose when you win.